On this episode of The Chop Up, we get into the entertainment chop and ask the question, can you separate the art from the artist? From some of the most scandalous statements and actions from some of our favorite celebrities, we try to figure out how are we supposed to respond when they show us who they really are. And then we get into the excellence chop. The spotlight is on Ariel Johnson of Amalgam Comments and Coffee, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. This black woman is on the move, defying expectations and putting comic book stores back on the map on the East Coast. Lastly, representing for the Lost Tribe, we get into the elections chop as Consciously and our guest Dominique get into the Ballad of the Bullet, a legendary speech by Malcolm X that shapes the way that black people in America orient themselves politically in this country on the day-to-day. But we have to figure it out. Were we missing something in that message? And what do we need to understand about Election Day coming up in less than a week? You know we got the music on deck with T. Lee and Mepham coming in with some amazing jams to flow through the show. But listen, if you have some art, if you have prose, instrumentals, poetry, rap, hip-hop, if you sing in a song, listen, if it's hot, we want to play it on the Chop Up. So send it in. TheChopUpEmail@gmail.com. TheChopUpEmail@gmail.com. Without further ado, it's time for the show. Y'all strap it in. It's time for the Chop Up.
This is the Chop Up. This is the Chop Up. This is the Chop Up, and no one can do it live. My name is Cam G, the coolest. Allow me to do the honor. I'm with my sister Toya G, and she's straight out of KC. Moved to the West Coast, but still gonna keep it G. We got together to give the people something that's free. The Chop Up should come off organically, cause on the mic, on the phone, we're gonna have these conversations anyway. And make sure you chop it up with us on the social media. And you can chop up any day, cause you can stream us in any place. And didn't I say I was Cam G, the coolest? Had to reel you in if you never knew us. Straight from Dallas, Texas, making OG maneuvers. And this is a recording where no one can do it live. This is the Chop Up.
Yo, yo, what's going on? This is the Chop Up. It's your boy Cam G, the coolest.
And you know it's your girl Toya G. What's going on?
Hey, I'm glad to be here, and we got another friend, or returning friend. What's up, Domo? How you doing?
What's good? What's good?
Speak
glad
for
to
you.
Be back.
Speak
glad
to the people.
Hello, people. How y'all doing?
We in this thing. Definitely excited for this week's episode. We got a lot of interesting stuff to talk about. Why don't you go ahead and bring us in?
So, first topic today is the entertainment chop. Can you separate the art from the artist? For me personally, that's something that's been on my mind, especially with the Nate Parker, Birth of a Nation, hearing about the Derrick Rose trial.
Right.
And just kind of reflecting on some past cases, like even Michael Jackson. Like, can you separate the art from the artist? Because, you know, recently you had D. Rose, who was found not liable in his rape case. And then you had Nate Parker, who was acquitted, and the victim eventually committed suicide. So these are some troubling things, especially after you read the transcripts in these cases. And it just is something, I think it's definitely a pertinent question. Like, can you separate the art from the artist? Like,
I mean, I think it's a real question. Dominique is mad because you brought up Michael Jackson and you brought Michael Jackson to the situation.
Definitely had to because he was acquitted just like everyone else. But, I mean, there's
not
this,
guilty.
There's
it's a blemish on the record.
There's this presumption of guilt on others. So, you know.
Especially with a crime, with crimes as serious as like sexual abuse and violence and stuff like that. You know, it's not really as easy as just being like, okay, so here's another album, forget about it, you know? So, I mean, a lot of people, Dominique, how you feel? Like, Domo, what's good?
To be honest, no. You cannot separate the art from the artist.
Okay.
I mean, because, like, why do we appreciate art? And why do we hold artists in such, you know, high regard? And that's because they create, you know, from within. They take whatever their medium is and produce from nothing, whether it's like a blank page, tablet, whatever. And so what they produce, it's also a lot of what they think, how they feel, how they orient themselves to the world. And so we all know that although there may be some things that aren't as like explicit, and like whether it's like a particular bias or a typical understanding of the world, it may not be explicit, but it's in there. You know what I mean? And so, in a lot of ways, sometimes we have to take the good with the bad. We have to understand that. I mean, there are those imperfections in there, and it comes from the fact that these are people that we're dealing with. You know what I mean? So when we try to separate the art from the artist, we create almost a different understanding of like who that person is and such. You know, that like the celebrity as opposed to the person. And so when they do crazy things and or things we disagree with, we become confused because we have this this idolized perception of like what they are based on the piece of them that we know, their art.
So wait, I'm confused. Are you saying we can separate the art from the artist?
You cannot.
You cannot separate the art from the artist.
You gotta take the good with the bad.
But I'm saying, what do you do with that good versus bad tension, though? Right? Mm-hmm. What's the threshold for bad to where I don't really rock with what you're doing? Right? So like R. Kelly, prime example. Yeah. Like I have a really hard time listening to his music now, but also it sucks because, like, think about our generation. All three of us at some point during kindergarten graduation, fifth grade graduation, or eighth grade graduation, I believe I can fly play. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Yep. We sat around and watched MTV Trapped in the Closet 1 through whenever they stopped playing them, and then when they put the rest of them on YouTube, we watched the rest of them there. Yep. They had mad apps. You know what I'm saying?
Like 20 something.
Then I mean, Stepping in the Name of Love, it's the remix to Ignition, Hot and Fresh, out of the kitchen.
Go ahead, tap your foot to that.
My goodness gracious. And so it's so many jams, but like, I feel wrong. And it's so weird. Here's the thing about separating the art from the artist. I feel so weird because I don't really have a standard for how I pick and choose, but I can't lie and say I don't pick and choose. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, that would Everybody be a story. Does. And so, I mean, I feel so icky because, like, okay, I made a list of some other people. So we already talked about Michael Jackson. We talked about Nate Parker. We talked about Derrick Rose. Here's some other people with some tattered past that people have, you know, kind of ebbed and flowed with how they felt about them. You got Dr. Dre, just recently put on blast for the Michelet expose or the autobiography.
Biopic.
Mm-hmm. Let me speak correctly about what it was. Yeah. but there was, you know, a very interesting depiction of what he did and his abuse and his past and how he kind of dealt with that and has been highly unapologetic about it throughout his career. You got Bill Cosby, which black folk are just really hung up on how they felt about it. And I think I saw an article today that said that he was acquitted of some defamation charges or something like that. And so his lawyer's just batting him out the park right now.
Yeah.
And then, of course, everybody, moment of silence. Lord have mercy. Lil Wayne has lost his mind. The boy Weezer really fell off his rocker and started talking wild about how, you know, Black Lives Matter don't concern him.
Yeah.
Ain't got nothing to do with him.
I mean, this is the thing about that.
He been gone.
This is the thing about that. Because another name I want to add in here is Rick Ross. Because I'll be the one to never let this go. The putting Molly in her drink, she ain't even know.
Yeah, Ross. Gotta put him on the list.
Never let it go. Let it go.
I don't need fool with Ross though.
You know what I'm saying? And that's the thing. You know, at the end of the day, people who decide to still listen to Rick Ross accept that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so it's not that. We can say that we logically for our sake, for our sanity, because we don't want to stop listening to it. You know what I mean? Like, we can say that we'll separate the art from the artist, but that's a cop out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Cause like,
I don't know. You say it's a cop out. You think it's a cop out? You think that's a cop out? To say that you can separate the art from the artist?
It's a cop out.
Nah, it's not. I mean, honestly, when I watched some of the Knicks game, and the first thing when I saw D Rose was the case that just came up of reading the transcript, like that came up, but then I saw him like cross Conley over, and I'm like, ooh, shit, like
he's an issue,
right?
So it was on the forefront of my mind when I first saw him, but then I'm sitting there watching him play, and I'm still, you know, appreciating what he's doing on the court, but I also couldn't not think about what I read and what I, you know, what I heard, you know.
Right.
And then seeing even the case, though, like, not the case, but afterwards, you know, taking pictures with jurors and, you know, shit like
that. Yeah, that was just so cheesy. I was so upset about that. That was fake.
Yeah, I mean, that's just, you know, that's just it disgusting.
Was,
yeah,
it was
to
very
me,
poor
so.
In taste.
And I think that's something that reflected on Nate Parker as well. And like you said, Dr. Dre, and just like that, them choosing to just be completely dismissive about it. And for whatever reason, when it comes to Nate Parker or a nigga being found not guilty, the justice system works.
Well, I mean, I think too, though, and this, you know, the interesting question becomes, I think from the perspective of these artists, not to defend anything, but it's like, how much, what else do I really have to do? What is my burden? What is my standard of engaging with this in a world where I've been acquitted or was not, you know, pressed against me? Like, how much of, and like, so I think that was Nate Parker's frustration. Like, okay, how much of a sorry do y'all want? Like, I didn't kill that young lady. Mm-hmm. I was proven not to be guilty. Mm-hmm. A court of law, you know, in a world where we live in even the legal system says there is no double jeopardy. You can't be tried for the same crime twice. Like, I can understand in the world of your argument about all of us being human, right? How many times do I really have to be tried by the fire in order to really prove that either A, I did not do what I'm being accused of, or B, my attempts at redemption are enough or should be enough for us to move past this human moment and let me recoup some of my life?
Me personally, I would say this. If there is anything that you have ever truly been sorry about, it doesn't matter how many times it gets brought to your attention. It does not matter. That woman's life is gone.
Yeah, I laugh because this makes me think about a situation that you can't live down in our little circle of debate.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know, I mean, it's something that you have, you know, to kind of be if, like,
if,
yeah, I
if
did
you
that.
Know you were wrong,
yeah.
Every time it's brought up, you got to feel that dagger because that's a part of it. You made a mistake.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And in this case, your mistake, regardless of what you felt like, regardless of how you felt about the situation, something was not right with her.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so in that case, if somebody brings it to your attention, hey, consent was a question, even though I had issues with that.
Mm-hmm.
If you have to explain that every time, you owe black people, yes, black people, that explanation, especially black women.
Yeah.
That explanation.
I think that was what G, you was talking about, kind of had you so hung up because you read the transcripts. You was like, even if, you know, even though the court said X, Y, and Z, this stuff is still like, nah, you can't do this.
Yeah, you still was grimy for that shit. And then, you know, why after she makes, you know, makes her claim that you harassing her and stuff like that, why do something like that? And then why make a rapey ass movie that wasn't even historically factual.
Yeah, in terms of Nate.
Then based off of, you know what I'm saying, a white man's recollection of Nate, Nate Turner.
Right, so.
Yeah.
I don't know, I just, and then, you know, seeing some of the 60 Minutes interview on him, it was like, you know, I saw that dagger hitting him when, you know, when the question was brought up. Like, you know that was, you know that was foul, man. Now, now this woman gone, you know?
Got to be held accountable every time.
And that's, every that's time. That's the thing.
Okay.
I was going to ask, like, so do we watch the movie or not?
I don't think those two questions, I don't think the question of whether or not you think he's guilty or wrong or anything has to do with whether or not you watch the movie, not because you separate the art, but it's a question of, is it worth it? You know what I mean? Like, if you know, it's a movie.
Right.
At the end of the day, it's a movie.
I mean, but people's ultimate logic for not going to go see it is not, do I miss this great moment of artistry for the sake of what I believe in or not? It's like, do I put money in this nigga's pockets knowing I don't agree with his politics? I think that's a lot of people's, like.
But I mean, at the same time,
it's easy to do. It's easier to not go.
It's like, nah, I'm good.
Right, and I think that's why it's not as much of a debate. You know what I mean? If you want to see the story, If you think it's value in seeing the story, go see the story. Regardless of what you think about him. And that's not separating the, like, him from the art, because like he didn't produce the story of Nat Turner. Right. You know what I mean? He just put it on the screen. I mean, but you could see some of his politics play out in that movie.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like the way, like how he had the master by, you know what I mean? All of that. And so like I said, we choose, like we accept them for who they are. We accept it for what it is. You know what I mean? Well, we accept we accepted Rick Ross. We accepted especially allegations of race.
So Lil Wayne, can you still come to the barbecue or he done? Like, what you saying? We accepting him or like, what are we doing? Cause I heard he got traded. I seen some memes today that say he got traded for some white people to come to the barbecue. They started picking white folk. I think they said, I ain't never seen Power. They said the little white man from Power can come.
Keep your dusty ass at home.
Man, look, since we don't
have him. Wayne can't come.
You good, bro.
He was too passionate. He was too passionate about that. He went on.
But it's such a contradiction, because shout out to my man, George Lee. On Snapchat,
found the videos of him at a show.
Posting videos of him at a show talking about
Black Lives Matter,
like chanting it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. So it's just like, come on, you bullshit, man.
So why the dramatic change all of a sudden? Like,
that's what we're trying to figure out.
I guess that's why he is invited to the picnic, because we need to sit this nigga down and be like, what the fuck are you doing?
Georgia Bush, Mr. Misunderstood,
you know what I'm saying? Fuck Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton,
you know what I'm saying? Like, all these songs.
Come on, man.
Listen.
So is he pandering at that moment? Now he's just like, I'm
to
cool.
Who?
I don't know. I'm trying to figure out what he's doing. Ever since this man started skating, and this is no shade to the black skater community, to people who get down, and I'm for real.
Ever since he started skating, that was
ever since I am not a human being.
That's when things started to really change. Yeah. Like that subculture really, I think, started to alter how he dealt with the culture where his money was at, where his kinship was at, where his supporter was at. You know what I'm saying? I think that really started to change how he dealt with and orient himself toward his original fan base. And I mean, his bad. I think he's stupid for that.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to, put myself under the spotlight though, because I adore Kobe Bryant, admire the man.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. You know what I mean?
He definitely basically raped somebody, raped that young lady in Colorado.
Bought a
fat ring to apologize for that business. And
it's all good.
You know, it's hard. What I'm saying? But every time, I want to respond and kind of push back, but you can't. You feel me? You can't. I have to say that, like, you know, the athlete is like my Michael Jordan. Right. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
but people hated Kobe at that time. It was a good time period where he was just hated, like LeBron.
I recall, even still, like, Kobe has never been loved. He's been respected.
At that time, he was hated, though. He was getting booed around the league. Every arena, he
everywhere.
Was
what Dave Chappelle said, he was playing for his freedom. Like,
and he let the league have it too.
Basically, and I think that's what when they had him massage all them.
That's when he became the ball hog. He was like, and he smushed Parker in there. Let's get started. But I mean, and that's why I will say that, you know. When I hear that criticism, I have to accept it. Mm. And the thing is, I'm not going. I don't hear that criticism and be like.
My question though is always going to be, how does accepting it materialize itself? Like, you've accepted it. Cool. That means you watch less of this nigga's games, none of this nigga's games. Mm. You listen to all the music, when it's on the radio and you can't control it. Do you leave the room when it comes on? Like, these are the questions I have for how you materialize.
You take that shame.
Yeah.
And you keep it pushing. Just like he said, he was watching, when he was watching
D-Rose. I'm asking you as the fan, not him as the
I'm talking about Cam. When Cam was like, when he was watching D-Rose, and he was thinking about the transcript, but he was like, he just didn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's still looking good on the court. But that transcript come back up, and he's like, he looking good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a sad reality, but that's what we do. That's literally what we do. We just kind of push it out. And it's not that we justify it. It's not that some people do, you know, but it's more so we accept it as they flaw, take the criticism. and then just keep it pushing.
So my response ultimately to this question in that world is kind of like this. Do we separate or should we separate the art from the artist? No, but I want to say yes. I really, really, really want to say yes. I say no because I feel like if you flirting with Blurred Lines, bump bump, shout out to Robin Thicke and how he also kind of fed into a rape culture that was being fueled by the Ross business. Yeah. But I feel like if you flirt with those thin lines like that, and you fall on the wrong side of them, you got to kind of eat that. You know what I'm saying? You got to kind of eat that. You got to deal with people because you played. You know what I mean? Yeah. You let some stuff you knew was tricky business go ahead and get in the way of a sure thing. You knew people was buying your business, your albums, your product, was being fans of your shows and your stuff like that. And you put yourself in a precarious position. Yeah. And so you got to eat that. That's also a part of being human, right? Mm. But like it really, really sucks. I understand that, and I want to say yes because of what art is, right? Like, once you create art and you are an artist that has been given a platform to do your art, to sell your product, to make your music, to play your game, you give it up to people. You know what I'm saying? And so that's the other part of it is like, then what do we understand this art to be? Like, is it theirs anymore? Like, we really kind of own it. Like, you shouldn't be. I feel like if it's art and the way art is being shared and understood and creating culture and stuff like that, you don't just get to sit on art and be like, or we don't get to just connect somebody to something amazing and be like, well, now it ain't shit because you're terrible. Well, you know what I'm saying? I think that does us a disservice as human beings, as people, as creators and curators of art.
But to your point though, like I will still argue that you can't separate the two.
Yeah.
But to your point, like art is also a moment in time.
True.
Like it's like whether it's music, like a painting, a photograph, all it's like it's that moment. And so Kanye is a perfect example for me because this new Kanye, I cannot damn, Lord have mercy. Yeah, this man is annoying.
Like, being tripping, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. But you know, if you knew me in high school when I first started debating and getting conscience and reading, like
you looked like Kanye.
You used to dress like. Kanye. I wanted to. I mean, because like that was like the definition of.
But yes, he did.
I definitely
with
had
the white with the undershirt and with the sweater vest with the jeans and the Air Forces.
Yeah, all of it. And you know, but it was also his message, like what he spoke to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he spoke to like wanting to be cool, but also wanting to be smart. And in a world where, you know, you were either a nerd or you were a street dude, you know, trying to find a way to be, you know, respected for your, like, you know, what makes you you. What makes you you. But, you know, him, he really speaking to, like, culture and life, especially of black people, and trying to move through that, trying to become educated, all of that. You know what I mean? And I can never say because of Kanye now, I can't listen to 808, or, I mean, even, 808's Heartbreaks, I still listen to Late Registration, I still listen to College Dropout, I still listen to Graduation. I mean, did I jam Yeezy? Or Yeezus? No. Did I jam the new joint? What's the new stuff?
Pablo?
Did I jam? Life of Pablo? No.
You know jam, Watch the Throne?
No.
That wouldn't happen.
Nah.
I was cool on that one, but I jammed Yeezus though.
Yeah.
I thought after a while I got past the crazy sounds that were on there. But he was
to me, I could you know, the
he dropped some lines in there. He had some cold rhymes in there, and on that. What else? 808s definitely.
The Confederate flag, the Confederate flag on the jacket, and the Confederate flag on the tour material, done.
Oh yeah,
which one?
Couldn't do it.
When he put that, Confederate.
Jesus. Nope. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Nope. I got off the Ye train way earlier than that. I don't know what happened. I just.
At any point though, you can always go back to a College Dropout, Late Registration, Kanye, and say, I will jam
the hell out of it.
And so so that's not necessarily separating.
I had a student give a speech about Kanye today.
Yeah. And that's not necessarily separating that music from Kanye.
Yeah.
But it's just like, it's when we remember him as.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, that's really what it is.
I mean, I don't know. I feel like we'll never really get to a place where we have a decisive line or a standard or whatever. It is really based person to person. But I do, I think there does have to be, because, I mean, we come from a world of debate, and I'll kind of conclude my thoughts on this. Like, we come from a world of argumentation and analysis where we look at an artifact, we look at a situation, we not only look at it, but who contributed it, who produced it, mm-hmm. their history, their past. Credibility. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? If somebody used to be a Nazi and they wrote your article that you're using to support you, we're going to find out. We're going to be like, you a Nazi. They a Nazi. You a Nazi.
You create Nazi. You vote for this shit. You a Nazi.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Like, you know what I'm saying? All that shit, man.
All of it.
We're not here.
He racist. You racist. Well, everybody who allowed this to be read in this room right now, racist. If you let this happen, you are racist as hell.
Yeah, like, I mean, and shout out to I forget the name of the school where David Duke, the ex Grand Wizard for the KKK,
Dillard University, New Orleans.
Shout out to Dillard University. Everybody that was out there protesting. You know, he running for some office, and Senate they had somewhere. Man the Senate.
They was having no part.
And they had a debate on campus, and David Duke was a part of the debate. And they didn't want to have it there. It was because Dillard is a historically black university.
Yeah, of course,
you know what I mean. They didn't want to have it there, but you know, they were contractually obligated to go along with the program, and they wasn't having it.
The university, because. I read somewhere they said they weren't aware or something of that nature about his affiliations.
Well, like, it's like, this is the thing, when they sign the contract to do it, mm-hmm. they don't know who's going to poll well enough to make the state.
Oh yeah,
because you have to be polling within a certain a certain number to even be able to be on the debate stage.
Okay, that makes more sense.
And surprise, surprise, David Duke. It was polled well enough to debate on the stage of a historically black university for a Senate seat to represent those individuals.
And so, then the police get turned against the students.
Against the students.
Mm. But of course.
For protecting. Let's call it letting the Klansmen.
That's called a formulaic ending.
Yeah. So, shout out to them. But
that's wild.
Continue.
Well, can you separate the art from the artist? Make sure y'all make a conscious decision about who you're listening to and what you're listening to. My personal decision is, if you can justify it, you can roll with it. If you can, what Dominique say, you should, if you think about it, if you reflect on it,
yeah.
Then, you know, do what you have to do with that. But know who you're listening to. I think, you know what I'm saying, being able to answer to some of what you allow yourself to internalize is important.
And don't be mad.
So yes,
you know,
no.
if Gucci is who you jam, who you love,
yeah.
Regardless of the crazy shit that he's saying, you know what I'm saying?
Like,
rap, hey, but I draw the line at Wayne, because black lives do matter.
Hey.
On that note, what you feeling? Y'all feeling like some music?
Hey, what we got?
We got the young man T. Lee Fly Mac coming real quick at us with this Dance Forever jam. It's been on a couple things. Snoop Dogg been peeping him out, right?
Oh yeah, it's on Doggy Style Records SoundCloud page. I'll go check it out.
Absolutely, but check that SoundCloud out. Check out T. Lee Fly Mac, T. Lee Fly MACK on SoundCloud and Instagram. Anything else to add about this young man, G? This is our boy. We went to school with this man. Anything else?
Shout out to Greenville, putting East Texas on the map.
Hey.
Shout out to T. Lee, Tim Chan, TLG, Bunk, everybody out there is rocking with Fly Mac.
Doing work. T. Lee to Fly Mac, this is Dance Forever, SoundCloud or IG, but you know we playing it right here on the Chop Up.
I know you've been in love with the nightlife. Inch away from the wife type. Your mama and them keep saying get your life right. But you just tell the manager to get the lights right. Cause you the only reason niggas heard a night right. Head tight, you ain't never been a fool. You working like to pay your way through school. Enough ones on the floor to fill a pool. Take a dip, pull up, drink, swimming pool. She want a money tree just like Kendrick. I remember that, baby, that's why I'm tipping. I know you mentioned your friend was bartending. But once again, baby, that's why I'm sipping. And I'm tipping her too. Even though she give me free drinks when we talk about you. Even though it still feel like an interview. All the questions I answer, cause you my private dancer. Her neck,
her back, my pockets, my stacks, her neck, her back, my pockets and my stacks, and my stacks. She just wanna dance forever, she just wanna dance forever. She just wanna dance forever, I know she wanna dance forever. Her neck, her back, my pockets, my stacks, her neck, her back, my pockets and my stacks, and my stacks. She just wanna dance forever, she just wanna dance forever. She just wanna dance forever, I know she wanna dance forever. I know it really ain't about the money, but then again, I guess it could be. I always had, I gave you plenty bread, but then again, on the other hand, you've been good to me. If the money stop coming, I guess we'll see. If I ever fall off, then I guess we'll see. Neither one of them about to happen. Nigga made it rapping, shouts out the fly, mackin' on. I would say I'm trying to save you, but you still be dancing for the public. I would say I'm trying to wipe you, but you a private dancer and I love it. And you my private dancer, come sit on my private, come ride in the cockpit, baby girl, I'm the pilot. Put mileage all over your body, ain't no reason to hide it, girl, we love it. Her neck, her back, my pockets, my stacks. Her neck, her back, my pockets and my stacks, and my stacks. She just wanna dance forever, she just wanna dance forever. She just wanna dance forever, I know she wanna dance forever. Her neck, her back, my pockets, my stacks, her neck, her back, my pockets and my stacks, and my stacks. She just wanna dance forever, she just wanna dance forever. She just wanna dance forever, I know she wanna dance forever and ever.
We are back from T. Lee to Fly Mac jamming with some Dance Forever. Go ahead and find him on SoundCloud and Instagram. Support that artist. He's coming up. Snoop is paying attention. We are paying attention. We love T. Lee right here on the Chop Up. But it's time for the Excellence Chop. And on this week's episode of the Chop Up, we are talking about Ariel Johnson, an amazing, amazing entrepreneur who has opened up Amalgam Comics and Coffee in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Shout out to Philly, putting things on the map. Shout out to Philly because a black woman is up there running things in the comic book world and she's really doing her thing. How y'all feel about this? She's killing it. Ariel Johnson is really out here.
It's pretty dope. It's pretty dope. I actually got a chance to, I'm not big in the comics, but I do think they're cool to look at, especially the artwork. And I got to go in the comic store today. I'm just, you know, kind of browsing and definitely thought about Ariel Johnson. I'm like, it would be dope to, you know, go in one of those stores and you see a black woman there doing a thing, got her art everywhere, and, you know, just black, having that black store. And because the store I went in today, it was like that, almost like that stereotypical middle-aged white man chilling in there. It's like, you know, it's like kind of what you expect, but, you know, I think it's just really dope. And her being on the cover of Marvel is really dope. Two black women on the cover of Iron Man, that's coming up, so and it's with Riri Williams is the other character. So they being real black out there.
Yes, yeah. Riri, what's up?
I'm a you know, I hate to admit it, but I'm a comic book nerd. You know what I mean?
Don't hate to admit it. Be yourself.
And
don't be no shame.
It's it is what it is. You know, but it's great to see this emergence of black people and black culture in comic books, because it's something that, you know, you get more green, blue, yellow people, you know, with prominent roles than you do black folk. And and usually when you, earlier on when you originally got them, like, everybody's loving Luke Cage, for example. But Luke Cage was originally a blaxploitation kind of a commercialization of blaxploitation for Marvel to come up with a superhero to benefit off of. And so for that to now become, you know, such a meaningful statement, a bulletproof black man in today's popular culture is dope. Or even Ironheart, which is the new Iron Man. There was this huge outrage about the way in which she was drawn. And they, because the first one of her variant covers shown her a little bit more sexualized that people were comfortable with, and she's only like supposed to be like 14, 15 years old. And so the internet, you know, Twitter went crazy and was like, this is how you draw a 15-year-old black girl. And Marvel was like, all right, cool. And they scrapped the cover, you know, and they respected the Witches because it's I don't know, you know, it's a corporation, it's a company, you know, but Marvel, Stan Lee and
very guys, much aware.
Yeah, like they a little too hip. You know, Black Panther about to be coming out, and again, I mean,
2018.
Yeah, he was dope in the Civil War movie. I've always been a fan of Black Panther because he richer than Bruce Wayne. Run a country in Africa that ain't been touched by Europeans, and this is you know, stuff that was shaped by white people. You know, white people came up with the idea for this, and so I mean, not giving them the credit at all. But at the same time, to be able to shape this world and have young Black people exist in this world.
I mean, I think it's really cool. I read an interview from Ariel Johnson, and this kind of jives very well with what you first said about your recent comic book store existence, but also you, Damo, with what you just talked about in terms of this, you know, awesome diversity that's even available and at our fingertips now. Is her coffee shop is very unique. One of the questions she was asked was, how do you craft your space and create your space to be accommodating to young Black and LGBT individuals who want to come to a different environment that maybe don't feel as welcomed in, generally in terms of comic book stores. And she was like, one of the ways I do that is by using a lot of big, bright, vibrant colors, very wide open spaces, not that doomy, musky, dusky dungeon kind of basement feeling, but really just opened it up and made comic books accessible just by the general appeal of them, right? Mm-hmm. The art speaks for itself. Like you was talking about, G, what you're really into in just terms of the artistry and, you know, a lot of the handwork and stuff like that, that's going to be there. Mm-hmm. The plot lines is going to be there. Mm-hmm. It's just about creating a space for you to really get your clientele in. And people, if people want comic books, they're going to come get the comic book. So right, you got that audience, but you also make something appealing and accessible for people who wouldn't commonly come in. And then that's where you get to, I think another question was, you know, well, what types of comic books do you sell in there? She was like, well, you know, the old tried and trues is what gets our audiences in. Mm-hmm. But it does give me the opportunity to now create a platform and a space for me to slide in those other beautiful projects that don't really get a lot of airplay or a lot of eyes on them in other comic book stores and spaces. And so Amalgam is really interesting in terms of it being a sit down, chill spot, a space where it's really open and inviting to a whole bunch of different people who need to be at the new generation of enjoying comic books, especially as things go digital and you know, get less tangible, excuse me, and less physical. She's really like insistent on her, you know, pivot on diversity being one that's embedded in the product. You know what I'm saying? And I bang with that.
And that's, people looking for that, you know, that physical copy nowadays, and you know, people are kind of rebelling from that digitizing everything, you know, so that's pretty cool. Go ahead.
You good, my fault. But as somebody that grew up liking comic books, but knowing people around it, you know, around me, you know, kind of look down on it or whatever.
Right.
If as a kid, if I would have known that I had a Black comic book shop anywhere in my neighborhood, anywhere I could go, it would have been like my own little haven. You know what I mean, like a safe space for me to go in. Because to be honest, I'm the type of, I ain't gonna lie, I be kind of sneaking and hanging around the comic book section at Barnes and Noble and like see what kind of even at the manga anime section and see, you know, what kind of people be over there. And if I see Black people, I'm rapping. I'm like, what you like? You know what I'm saying? Yeah, yeah. And like, a lot of times they're surprised because they like, you know, they see a nigga like me, it'd be like, I'm like, well, I kind of been watching. And I'm like, I've been watching that shit too. You feel me? Who your favorite character? You know what I'm saying? And when they see
the biggest kid in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, but
I'm like, what?
But for real though, when they see, you know, somebody like me, that you wouldn't just look at and be like, oh, he likes comic books. You know what I mean? When they see
fully bearded, 6'2",
handsome,
slender, Black man with a baseball cap on.
Yeah, look, just looking handsome,
looking some type of way.
But it's asking you about comic books. You kind of see him like smile in a way to where it's be like, okay, like it's a connection, a relationality. Yeah. And for her to offer that, not even just to Black people, but to like Black girls,
to introduce.
Said that's why she got into it. Seeing Storm
her character
in X-Men was like was life changing.
Yes.
So just that one character has led, you know, to this
story. And to
being and, the only one on the East Coast. Like.
Yeah.
And you see Storm, again, Storm in leadership positions. Storm has led the X-Men, not just been a X-Men. She is she is one of the more respected characters in the Marvel Universe. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She's actually married to Black Panther and all this other shit. Like, so it's like, you know, to us, to us comic book nerds, that's the power couple. Like, mm-hmm. We ain't worried about Jay and Betty, you know what I'm saying? We got Aurora and motherfucking
people from Wakanda.
T'Challa, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, you feel me? So, you know, but it's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing to see Black people in comic books and branching out and showing people just like something new.
It ain't even branching out though. I think it's the opportunity to expose the fact that, I mean, Black people come in all different types of flavors. There's always some Black folk up to something. We just don't know about it. You know what I'm saying? It's the platform hasn't existed. It's not enough of them to really put it on blast, but Black people are always in the mix. You better believe that.
Oh, yeah. Getting all those flavors and, you know, Luke Cage was super Black. And Missy Knight. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And for me, you know, seeing it, to be honest, man, it's been being an adult right now, growing up in the 90s, having these cartoons, and then becoming an adult and having all the best movies. Oh, man. But that's for a whole another, you know what I'm saying? Like, because, like, look, I didn't see all the Avengers twice. Yeah. Yeah. You know what I mean? The Captain Americas, the Iron Mans. I've been on it, man. This is because ever since they first started coming out with the first Spider-Man movie back in the day, Spider-Man and X-Men.
And you know, they got to have another reboot.
Another one. For not having enough of an imagination. So I'm not as deeply immersed in the comic book world as I would like to be. I have watched some things. Yeah, I've seen Luke Cage. I've seen some Daredevil. I've seen some things.
Don't even get me started on Daredevil.
Here and there and Daredevil all over the things.
Don't even get me started on Daredevil.
I don't know. I'm excited that a Black girl done stuck her toe all up in this world that is A, dominated by white folk, B, dominated by men.
Thor is a woman,
C,
too.
Thor.
She ain't even Thor. They ain't even change her name. They ain't even do
her
like
they
that.
They just put her on.
They just like, you Thor now. You know what I mean?
Well, damn.
Hey, shout out to Marvel. They doing their thing. We still know what it is.
Marvel.
We still know what it is.
Marvel doing their thing. Ariel Johnson is doing her thing. That's why we got to give her that nod during the Excellence Chop. Amalgam Comics and Coffee up in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. If you're ever up that way and you are a comic book nerd like Dominique,
you gotta do it. I'm going.
Go ahead and find your way up to our spot. Shout out to Ariel. Yo, it's real. All right, I think it's time we slide into some music. And coming up next is an artist that goes by the name of Muffum, straight out of Manhattan, Kansas. Coming real with the instrumental vibe, the dankness, the real chill we need right here on the Chop Up. This particular song is called Cloud and is a reflection of Muffum's approach to music, which is to take mechanical sounds and organic sounds to really mix them together with what he calls electronic chill. All right, I'm going to let it speak for itself. Without further ado, you know what it is. It's Cloud on the Chop Up. we back on the Chop Up. You just got done listening to Mepham with some beautiful instrumental music. The name of that song was actually Cloud. If you want to hear more, find Mepham on SoundCloud. Go ahead and look him up. It's amazing music, amazing jams. MFM is how you spell that. So go ahead and check him out on SoundCloud. Right now, let's go ahead and jump into one of my favorite sessions, especially since the big day is less than a week away. You know what it is. It's the election shot. All right, y'all. It's about that time. What are we doing? How are we feeling? What's going on? We nervous? We confident? What's going on? What's good? How you feeling?
It's a little scary. I participated today. Ooh. When hit the early poll.
Did you get a sticker?
I have a sticker. I wore mine for the remainder of the day.
Did you put it on Facebook?
Is it standard? I didn't do that.
That's
yet.
That's the rule. You ain't do that, right? Put it on Facebook so we know it's real.
You don't have
so it's not. It wasn't real.
Nah, you good, bro? Don't, listen, people who
I think I
people who do that make me mad.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Like they make me mad. It's just like, listen, I you know what? I'm not even gonna be that person. I'm not even gonna be that person. But you know, I'm not worried in the least of bits.
Do I'm I have not worried about what specifically?
Well, I mean, it's no question that I'm very much against Donald Trump. In the words of the great poet YG, fuck Donald Trump.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Fuck Donald Trump.
That's where we are.
And so, you know, you know, I like to I like to have a little bit of history, you know, and how and the way that these go down. And although Hillary, she's not the best candidate, but I'll be the first one to admit I'm really voting against Trump. Is that the best way to vote?
No. I mean, well, maybe. I think
it could be. I mean, whatever your philosophy.
I mean, for real, that's how it is for me. You know, like I that's a risk that I just choose not to take. And if anything, at the end of the day, if there's like this huge blowout and Donald Trump loses, or even if it's really close and Donald Trump loses, I can say that's what you get. Like, I had something to do with that. You know what I'm saying? And it's really just to spite Donald Trump. I don't really, you know.
I mean, you got a reason, though, right? Yeah. And I think that's the bottom line of what we want to get at on this segment of the Election Chop is, you know, I'm shout out to Lost Tribe. I'm definitely representing Dominique.
Yes.
In the building, represent Lost Tribe. Even KG understands how we're moving around out here. And so Lost Tribe is really making some things happen, and one of the things we've been doing is putting out some videos that really poke at some of the logic, some holes in the logic that people have been using to explain how they're going to deal with these elections. One of the ways that has recently happened is through this video that really goes back and takes a look at Malcolm X's The Ballot of the Bullets. Y'all familiar with that?
Indeed.
Yeah, it was an explosive speech, an explosive dialogue to Black America that really forced and challenged them to look at what that ballot meant. But really, you know, a lot of people misunderstand it and think it's a forced choice. And so the video gets at poking, you know, some holes in that understanding of how people look at the ballot of the bullet. They get to the bottom, or it rather gets to the bottom of what Malcolm X is really talking about. And we throw some other analysis on there. Shout out to George Lee really being the voice that y'all are about to hear to propel this video into what it is. But
At consciously.
On everything. On SoundCloud, everything. Instagram, Twitter. Facebook, shout Twitter. He blowing up all of them. The boy G Lee is really out there. Consciously. At consciously. Go find him. But right now we're going to listen to the Lost Tribe version of the Ballot of the Bullet. Our understanding of it. Check this out.
What's really real? This your boy Conscious Lee bringing you another episode of Street Academics. This episode is about the presidential election, aka the black vote, aka your vote even count anyway.
Don't shoot me down, Mr. Officer, please. Right now I'm on my knees and I feel for my life. Bang, 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 bang. Was all I heard from the pistol. Why they wanna take my life from me?
Now, we're nearing the end of an explosive election where two of the most very unpopular and divisive candidates of our time will soon be leader of the free world. Now, many black folks are in agreement that we don't feel Trump at all, but Hillary Clinton's comments about black kids being super predators in the crime bill is hella suspect too, so we like, shit, I don't know about voting all together, you feel me? Some black people argue that we need to hold our right to vote in great privilege in regard to our hearts because there were lives that was fought. That and people that marched and rallied and that died for us to do so. And feeling like choosing not to vote would be a spit in those ancestors' faces who were denied their ability to participate in the process. And these the same black people that let it be known that if you don't vote, you can't complain or be mad if Donald Trump gets elected or makes shits worse because, hey, you ain't vote anyway. You know what I'm saying? And other black folks like, nah, we good. They watch the presidential election and Trump or Hillary gives a damn about mass incarceration or police brutality or black people. They just care about the black vote. So I don't care about them candidates anyway. These are the black folks arguing that casting a ballot only further legitimizes an illegitimate government that's structured in anti-blackness and white supremacy. These black folks let it be known also that crooked Hillary not holding they vote hostage because of the boogeyman Trump. Now, both sides offer legitimate criticism of the other, but who's right? The answer is the ballot or the bullet. In the Battle of the Bullet speech in April 1964, Malcolm X argued,
"We must understand the politics of our community, and we must know what politics is supposed to produce. We must know what part politics play in our lives. And until we become politically mature, we will always be misled, led astray, or deceived or maneuvered into supporting someone politically who doesn't have the good of our community at heart."
As explained by Malcolm X, the ballot or the bullet represents not an opposing strategies, but an ultimatum. He said it'll be the ballot or it'll be the bullet. It'll be liberty or it'll be death. And if you're not ready to pay that price, then don't use the word freedom in your vocabulary. This should not be a conversation of divisiveness, but a conversation to develop organization and understanding. Should we vote? Yes, if you have a plan. If Malcolm X and Donald Trump didn't agree on anything, it was this criticism. They take the black vote and they say, see you again in 4 years. Malcolm X also criticized the way black people blindly throw away their votes to Democrats, keeping them in office. Malcolm X said, the Negro vote is key factor. And despite the fact that you are put in a position in this determining factor, what do you get out of it? Good question. Instead of preaching on how we should be voting just because our ancestors fought for our right to vote, you should be articulating voting strategies and outlining what's to be lost and what's to be gained by electing or advocating to elect particular candidates that first represent our communities and understand our community. It should also be noted that local politics has just as much, if not more influence on the day-to-day realities than the presidential election. You know what's happening at City Hall is just as important about what's happening at the White House. If you care about voting, show people how it can work. Outline your strategy. Chill with the guilt tripping. And if you don't want to vote because you don't believe in the system, then don't. That's cool too, for real. But it don't make you a revolutionary. I repeat, it do not make you a revolutionary. And in fact, hashtag not voting does not make you a revolutionary. Not voting is an inaction. And if you really about that revolutionary life, it's important to note that the bullet in the ballot or the bullet represents the willingness to go to any extreme to bring about the social, political, and economic freedom of your people in the event that we are denied access to a free and fair election. You already feel that way anyway. Your argument is that we are already going through free and unfair elections. So what you doing? You may not believe in the political system or the overall effectiveness of voting. Ballots are still a tool used by white people and elites to legitimize the power that they already naturally claim. So revolutionary action is always about disturbing the comfort they have depending on the system. Real talk though, let's think about it. If ballots wasn't at least kind of important, why y'all think they fight so hard and have fought so hard to keep us away from them? You know what I'm saying? They fear black people organizing. The worst thing possible is for us to mess around and use the system against them. Now, don't get it twisted. This is not a call for all niggas, African Americans, Negroes, and black folks alike to up and run to your nearest polling place to cast your ballot. This is more of a call for us to have a consciousness and an awareness and accounting for how election periods can be used to gain black people freedom. Now, the ballot or the bullet is not a forced choice. It is a call to strategically plan for your freedom. There is no doubt at all that the people in power already hold the ballot close to them for some reason because it ever to sustain their power. The question is, what does the ballot mean to your freedom? You feel me? This is consciously bringing you another episode of Street Academics.
All right, so that is our kind of run back of Lost Tribes rendition or exploration, if you will, of the ballot or the bullet speech. But I really just kind of wanted to tease out some of what we really understood and walked away with from that, right? Because it was a lot of heavy concepts, a lot of core principles that we need to be thinking about in there. So what were some of the thoughts y'all had about some of the analysis?
Go ahead, Cam.
You know, it just made me want to be more organized in the community where I live, like wondering, you know, once we organize, what would our agendas be? What would we push for in the political process? Just, you know, just around where I am and, you know, just wanting that type of unification to use our vote to do something, to make some actual moves. But, you know, we need everybody to do that. But definitely was an on-point video. I've been seeing a lot of people, like, talk down on the voting process, but I mean, I very much still believe in it. It has to be done together. So
yeah,
I mean, I'm definitely with it though.
I mean, I think one of the interesting things that the Ballot of the Bullet got or left me wondering, and this is not even just wondering, but this is a question I used to ask in a lot of my debate arguments. You're right, the policy debate is set up so that every conversation is circulated around what the state should do, what the system should do, what the government should do, how they should respond to questions. And I think a lot of times when Black people decide not to participate, it reflects this idea of being real about the situation. Like, can a policy really even fix this? Right? Like, can't no policy keep track of corruption? Can't no policy keep track of mishandling? Can't no policy keep track of apathy? Policies can't change blatant anti-Blackness, racism, sexism, anti-queer politics, anti-trans politics, ableism, capitalism. Like, it's not never going to be an appropriate piece of legislation that can really be codified by any group of people based on how the system works and based on human rationality. Right, to really solve a lot of these problems. So we are taking policy solutions to people-oriented problems. There has to be a deeper shift or completely radical change about the way we do business, in my opinion, to resolve some issues. Now, I'm saying some because I don't want to paint this sweeping broad picture like every single issue on the ballot comes down to some larger question about humans. Sometimes we just need certain things, certain tax questions, certain propositions that are being pushed and introduced into a community. Like you said, right? We need to be knowing a whole lot more about that. So it's a level of strategery that needs to back up and inform what we're doing. Are you voting on purpose? Or are you voting because you've been programmed to and because you feel some obligation to history? You know what I'm saying? To go and participate things. And this is not to delegitimize history, but it's to be real about it. People, and I say this all the time, people did not die for our right to vote. People did not go stand out there and be abused for our right to vote. People did not go out there and fight and labor and push and rally. They were killed. They were backed into corners. This is a very intentional, very spiteful demand, not only on their citizenship and on their right to participate, but on their lives, right? So I'm not finna sit up here and valorize their deaths and recognize them as martyrs when they never went into these situations like, I want to give my life. They said, I'm ready to give my life, but I don't really believe that they said that they wanted to. You know what I'm saying? Like, this was a decision that they was making for a bigger, larger state. It's just a nasty, dirty, stanky system and really messed up people. Warped, disgusted, perturbed people who would do things like turn on hoses and release dogs and do shady things to people who was just trying to exercise a right you said they had. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I want people to be intentional about what they're voting for, what they're thinking about, how they reflecting on the decisions on the docket. And sometimes you got to be like, yeah, I'm a vote. And then other times you got to be like, I'm not, and here's why. Just know why you're doing what you're doing. That's really the message behind the Ballot of the Bullet.
Yeah, I think on the question of the of personnel, of like, you know, it not being a policy problem or being a people problem. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what the ballot in the way in which Malcolm X explains it. That's exactly what that problem is supposed to solve. It's supposed to solve the people mm-hmm. problem. Mm-hmm. When you look deeper into the speech, it's more about Black nationalism. And the way that he say, the way that he say that we achieve that by getting the leaders that we want in our neighborhood, and George speaks to this in the video, is when he's saying when he talks about advocating for like voting with a strategy and advocating for leaders that know our community and that we want in our community. You know, That like Malcolm X is saying, that's the way that we solve that problem is by voting. So if you don't like the fact, if you don't like your mayor, if you don't like your city council person, you can get them out of there. You can organize efforts to remove people like that from office through voting to actually change the material reality of your community. That actually can happen. Now, are there barriers? Can they, does the opposing forces create barriers, make it harder for these things to happen? Of course they do. So what? You know what I mean? That's not that's never been a reason for us to not go about it. They're going, if they make it hard, that means it must be effective.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Right. And again, I have to keep saying this. I'm not an advocate of voting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, I haven't I am not.
I don't trust in it.
I don't believe in the process. But at the same time, as a student of philosophy, I like to consider myself, not to sound pretentious, but as someone who studies philosophy, I like to think that there are certain philosophical principles about our democratic republic that are effective, that have shown to work. You know what I mean? And
here's the thing. I'm going to tell you why I believe in ballots. You want to know why I believe in ballots, y'all? Because they believe in ballots.
Yeah.
That's the real reason. And that was one of the things that G very eloquently pointed to, was the fact that, you know, if white people did not want, or systems and structures of power did not want, or did not think that our ballots were important, they wouldn't try so hard to keep us away from them.
What?
You know what I'm saying? I think that was very just... It painted a clear picture about which side how you have to deal with and orient yourself toward this. Because, I mean, just pride in and of itself is say, I'm going to take what you're trying to build and tear it down.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I'm going to go in and at least finagle with your system and what you take pride in and care about.
2012.
Right.
You have state senators, state officials saying, we passed voter ID legislation.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're going to get Barack Obama out of office. What?
Right.
What does voting not? It's explicit. Even today, 2016 in North Carolina, battleground state, where Hillary Clinton is leading in the polls, 4,000 voters, 60% black voters are purged from the voting rolls.
There is
a blatant effort to affect the way in which voting occurs. In the way in which, you know, we white people keep black people from voting. Mm-hmm. It's like, look, all you got to do is look at the headlines. If you Google voter ID, the Huffington Post, Washington Post, they talking about states repealing it because it's blatantly targeting,
and it's not even just
communities of color.
Them trying to keep people away from the ballot is trying to keep people off the ballot. What makes it a very complicated situation is not only do we not get people in these positions of power, but we then also can't endorse the people who actually end up with the spots. So it's like, we damned if we don't, and we damned if we don't, we damned if we do, if we damned if we do. Like, we damned.
But that's why it's important. It goes right back to your city officials, your county officials, because those things like ballots and vote and voting booths and all of that is ran on a county level. And so that's local politics.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? We have direct control over that. And so if we're not thinking about shit, we need to get some niggas voting officials.
Mm-hmm.
If we're not thinking like that, then we already behind.
Yeah.
We already, you know, we already in a position where we can get left out. Because people need to pay attention to these stories. All these, what they call, I think they call themselves the voting integrity group or whatever. All they had to do was go up to the voting officials and say, all of these letters came back, return addresses for these people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll take them off. Just like that. There was no pushback. There was no extra questioning. It was easy. It was simple. Because it's a concerted effort, like they're in cahoots, if you will, you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we're not looking at it like, why aren't there any black people running the voting booths? Why aren't there any black voting officials? Why aren't there any black people making sure that the respecting actual voter integrity? Then
I think the video explains that in one way or another. I think the reason why all of these logical things are not in place is one of the things G. Lee gets at, which is the idea that they take our vote for granted, right? Niggas gonna show up anyway. Yeah. Like, or the ones that we need is gonna show up, and they're gonna vote a certain way, which is why, I mean, as much as, you know, you're not saying vote, you know, for Hillary, or you're not saying vote for all, you know, it's really hard to say vote for one person or another, because in both worlds, you know, they just taking our vote for granted. Donald Trump think everybody broke, stupid, uneducated, and need some money, so we got to vote for him. And she's just trying to inherit the Democratic vote that has been passed down through her husband, the same 95 and 97% voter turnout rate that Barack Obama saw for his two terms. Yeah. And then also trying to come back and run that back for herself. And so, like, I think that's also something that both the Lost Child video and that Malcolm X demand of us, is that we not allow these systems to be so comfortable with how we're going to show up and what we represent and how we're going to move around. That they are, we let them get lazy on us and just give us any other thing and expect us to take it.
And for me, again, this is somebody who's been like, I really don't give a, I can care less about voting. But for me to now have this stance to where I'm just seeing, you know, all these statuses and, you know, everybody, I'm not voting for the lesser of two evils. And, you know, I stand for more than that. Hillary Clinton ain't getting my vote. Like, okay. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. that's fine. But what does that mean? And what George says in the video is straight up. That's inaction. You're not doing anything. You know, all you're doing is... You said what?
I said, what was the hashtag?
Oh, not voting is not revolutionary. Yeah. Hashtag. Yeah, not voting is not revolutionary, period. Right. You know what I mean? So, and let's think about it. What are you doing then? Because like he says in the video, the bullet represents our willingness to go to whatever means to get what we need by any means necessary. It's Malcolm X.
Right.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so if we're sitting here saying, okay, I'm not voting, okay, then what process are you going about?
Exactly. Are you organizing in your community? Are you... Like, what
doing something.
Are you building in other ways? Sure. Are you working with other people to create the political landscape and the social landscape that you need to survive and exist? Like, what else besides? I mean, and sometimes at moments, political apathy is completely understandable too, but that can't be a consistent kind of way that you shape and mold your community and the space that you live in, because then you're just underserving your existence.
But like, political apathy is the reason why we're complaining about our political situation now. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, we don't care about the fact that we have senators that have been in office for 30 years, 40 years.
Yeah.
They the problem.
Yeah. Like, do you see a change in that? Like, people, like, I feel like after this election, people...
No, like, Barack Obama had that appeal.
Picking up.
Barack Obama was loved. He was adored. Mm-hmm. Hillary Clinton, like, she's
tolerated.
But
he didn't get as active in local politics. Like, we slack. We got, you know, we let the Republicans get all in the House and Senate.
You're right.
And locally, it's, you know, similar situation. So I'm just wondering if we're going to, like, see, like, a kind of a paradigm shift, you know, because we're now, our backs are to the wall in a sense as far as a presidential election. Like, you know, there's people not fucking with either one.
I
don't know. I feel like I kind of see that more we have these conversations and, you know, just kind of chop it up people around the way. But then you still have that large section that, you know, oh, I'm not voting because X, Y, Z.
It's a matter of, okay, we have all these voting efforts, right? Like, we have all of these people who, whenever, every 4 years, whenever the presidential election up there, everybody's in our face. You need to be out and vote. Are you voting? Mm-hmm. If these same people came back every 2 years,
mm-hmm.
midterm elections,
mm-hmm.
when we're reelecting senators, when we're reelecting state officials, when we're reelecting these people with these shorter terms, If they're there and we have and we're educated on our options and we're actually putting people and we're vouching for people that we know represent us, then we can do something. That's where it starts. Mm. That's where it starts. You know what I mean? It's like finding the people that because they're there. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not gonna say we don't have leaders.
Right.
They're just not where we need them to be.
Right.
You know what I mean? Mm. And it's whether we blame it on popular culture, whether we blame it on whatever, it's just that we need to get to a position where we're saying, like this is who I want to know the name. I want to know my senator's name, my congressman's name,
my congressperson.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me.
Amen.
I want to know these officials' names. When I'm not just checking off, you know, straight down Democrat or straight down Republican. You know, I want to be able to write in. I mean, because let's look at Utah. Utah is a perfect example where they are not fucking with Donald Trump at all, right? And I wish I could think of the dude's name, but he's like he used to work for the CIA, and he's running for president. He's not really winning anywhere else. Like, he's not even really polling anywhere else. But it's a 3-way race in Utah with this dude, Hillary Clinton, and Donald Trump. You know what I mean? Wow. Because the people of Utah are like, we don't like either one of those people.
So we're gonna
stand behind this dude. You know what I mean? Mm. And so like that just shows you that if all you gotta do is come together locally. You come together locally.
That's power.
That's where it is. But
and then if a whole state can pull it together, my goodness.
Oh Lord.
Yeah.
Like that's proof right there. It can really be done.
I didn't know that at all.
Me neither.
But it's not, but you know, midterm elections are not glamorous. You don't get the same TV time, you know. And then, I mean, in most states, and in a lot of states really, you know, you don't really see too many of the ads. A lot of these people run unopposed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, we just need to get it. The thing about it is
being informed. Like, yeah. For this election, I came across, what was it? Something down here called the Women's League of Voters. Mm-hmm. And it had all the candidates in the county and their issues and, you know, what they thought about certain issues and that, just all one by one.
Yeah.
And that really got me hip to it. But I'm like, that was a lot of information. And it's like, you know, how are people getting this information? Are they... You know, they handed it out.
It's,
you know, it was in like libraries and stuff available. Like that. But you need that. You need that. Mm-hmm. You know, but people just don't know where to get it. And I got it, you know, kind of last minute.
Listen.
And people have been needing that.
People be finding sex tapes.
Yeah.
They be finding mixtapes.
Preaching.
Illegally download music.
That'll preach.
Listen.
You can find who's saying what about what around you.
Wait, like all of this is public information. It's if you just turned it on to C-SPAN. To be honest, and every local channel has a local government channel, mm-hmm. where you can just turn into and watch city meetings from last week, the week before.
Yeah,
you know, all of it's right there. It's all of it's right there. It's just a matter of
becomes, I mean, is it like we can, if things get bad, we can only really blame ourselves?
To a certain extent.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. We took part.
I mean, and this is not undermining how the system is set up, how the structures are set up, yeah. how anti-blackness is set up, how anti-everything is kind of set up. Like,
we can go shut it down.
Yeah, but I mean, and that's what I think it was important Dominique had mentioned. Like, it's definitely people out there. It's people in communities. It's people locally, on the state level, federally, that are making moves. You know what I'm saying? We can only be ashamed of ourselves when they don't get nobody showing up to vote for them. Mm-hmm. When, you know what I'm saying? They up here putting together campaigns with $0 and 0 cents. And that's why I really, you know, I'm excited too.
Hey, shout out to my man Dennis. Dennis Black. My man, he ran for city council
position. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
definitely.
Just, you know, out there doing this thing. He had the GoFundMe set up, and you know, he didn't win, but at the same time, like, to have his face out there, like, that was just much for me. I have much respect for the man, just for him to go putting out that effort. Going up there, talking to the people, doing what he can to try to make the change. Actually, in battle rap, mm-hmm. a battle rapper, and I think it's St. Louis, just got a city council position.
Of course.
You know, so it's like, you know, because he wanted to do something different. You know, and so it's available. It's just, and you can get people behind you. You can get people that's gonna rock with you if you have the right message. Mm-hmm. And if, like... If you got everything lined up, like, listen, this as a people, this is how we're going to move.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to move like this together. You know, like, we it's moving on from like the older order of like the Jesse Jackson and the Jacksons and the Al Sharptons and the NAACP and the way in which they move, you know, it hasn't bonded well with the newer generation. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And how they got behind people and how they organize and such. I can't really explain right now with like why that disconnect is, mm-hmm. and whether it's generational or whatever the case may be. But there's a way for us to come together and organize the ways in which they did in order to kind of put people in the leadership positions and have the impact that they had. And it's just a matter of...
I see that shift happening. I really do see that happening. People, like what Malcolm said, being politically aware.
Politically aware, that's exactly what he's talking about.
I see that shift kind of happening. So what you're talking about, I definitely see becoming a reality, you know, soon. It's just...
But we see it's
happening in our time.
We see, like, we need to encourage, like, the radical aspect, right? Like, when we see the riots and, like, we know what you're doing that for. You know what I mean? But at the same time, we don't need to shun the aspect of voting. We don't need to use it to guilt trip people either, though, for sure.
Right, exactly.
But at the same time, we need to use voting as a tool that is there, as a tool that is obviously coveted, and as something that we can utilize to make an impact on the local level, especially.
Yeah.
We're supposed to be on many fronts.
Mm-hmm. And
that's how the war is won.
That gets back to the essential question that Malcolm X posited and what Young Conscious Lee was talking about in the video, right? The ballot of the bullet is not a forced choice. It's a chain reaction. It's a relationship between the decisions we have as we move around and attempt to make the places where we're trying to raise our families and our futures in thrive and grow. And that's despite all of the systems and the structures that are set up against us and that are intentionally set up to constrain intentional groups of people, right? Mm-hmm. So the ballot of the bullet is like, if you're not using your ballot and you're using more radical means, you know, is that really the... Do you understand the kind of dilemma or the not even the dilemma, because it's not a conflictual relationship, but the decisions that you're making? Are you using the ballot in one moment and using the bullet in another? But I also think it could be another twist on that in terms of are you willing to die for the things that are out there happening on another level, right? Are you engaged in things that you're willing to risk your life for, that you're willing to put down your existence for? And if you're not, are you engaging in, you know, those intangible aspects of living, the ballot box, the systems, the structures, the politicians that also set up the other reality of your existence, right? How do you understand these two very important artifacts that you have to both use, right, in order to effectively navigate this thing called Black life in America?
And it's a matter of working together. Like you said, it shouldn't be a contentious relationship. It's more so we shouldn't be debating which one we should be doing. It's a question of, all right, y'all voting? Cool, I'm gonna make sure I got your back. So if they denying you that right, I'm gonna be the one that's in their face like y'all fucking up.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what it is. So if you not gonna vote, you're supposed to be making sure that the people who are gonna vote are being able to exercise that right. Because if not, if you just sitting back like, haha, they ain't let you vote anyway, what are you doing?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, then what are you standing for by not voting at that point? You know what I mean? So it's supposed to be a matter of, you know, that bullet is supposed to represent, look, just that the duality of of even the civil rights movement, what they try to break up into the violent and the nonviolent, but they try to break up into that. But it's not that. It's just, you know, we got the people who going to move one way, and if that fell, Plan B is right there. Like, we got something for you.
We are here. Shout out to Lost Tribe. Hey. For continuing to shed light on a whole bunch of issues. They got some videos on respectability politics. Check out Conscious Lee on whatever medium you look for, and you'll find those videos. And we also got new stuff always coming out. So
episode four coming soon. It's coming soon.
Hey. Shout out to the legendary Malcolm X. Thank you for paving the way. We appreciate you giving us something to think about and talk about even now. Way after the fact. Another successful episode of The Chop Up. Gentlemen, what do you think?
Thank you for having me.
Lit. Of course.
I'm here.
Domo, we appreciate you, brother.
Hey, I'm just glad that I get invited.
You know,
that's huge. That's huge.
Two times on the list. Yeah, so that means
first guess and first repeat.
Yeah, we must like you a little bit.
You know, next time I'm putting my feet up.
Please don't put your feet on nothing I got. Thank you very much. At any rate, you know what it is. You know how we get down. This is a chop up. KG, what you about to say something to the people?
I'm good. You know, shout out to the people. We love y'all. Appreciate the feedback we've been getting.
Yeah.
You know, the texts, the comments, the listens. We love y'all.
Hey.
You know, stick with us. We got stuff coming.
Like a stamp to a letter, baby. Stick with us. We going places. You dig. We out here. Hey, y'all. My mama taught me that. So if y'all ever wonder, it came straight from C-Murder. You feel me? Hey, this is the Chop Up. We out this thing. Catch us on the next episode. Episode 12 is coming soon. You know, we out here making moves. It is really, really real. Dominique in the building, KG in the building, and we out.
Yeah.
Hey, peace.
This is the Chop Up. This is the Chop Up. This is the Chop Up, and no one can do it live. My name is Cam G, the coolest. Allow me to do the honor. I'm with my sister Toya G, and she's straight out of KC. Moved to the West Coast, but still gon' keep it G. We got together to give the people something that's free. The Chop Up should come off organically, cause on the mic, only